Well.
Hello?
Yeah. Yes.
This is Miguel. Miguel? Yeah.
Yeah, John, you here now? Hey, John, you in?
All right, Doug, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Perfect. Yeah, I can. I can. All right. Great. Welcome to another episode of Weather Eyes. I am John Hominick from New York Metro Weather. Doug is here alongside me. We are really excited for this episode of Weather Eyes. We have a lot to cover, and we are going to be bringing in two really special guests, two people that are really well-respected and knowledgeable in the field of meteorology. We have Ed from AccuWeather and Mike from BamWeather.com. Both of them will be joining us shortly. And we're very excited to bring them both on and just have the opportunity to discuss the winter pattern with them and talk about how the next couple of weeks are going to shake down. So, Doug, just to open things up before we bring them in, let's recap kind of where we are right now and the last couple of weeks of weather. We took a week off from Weather Eyes last week. And I guess, you know, the best thing right now is kind of to just chat a little bit about where we are currently with the weather pattern right this moment, not necessarily what's going to happen the next couple of days, but the pattern across the United States right now. It's kind of in a state of transition, I think would be the best way to describe it. There's a lot of changes going on in the hemisphere, across the continental United States as well. It has been the last 25 to 30 days have been days that have featured a lot of maritime Pacific air across the United States. There has been periods of cold, particularly in the Northeast. But so I mean, by and large, it's been a mild period across the United States. Those anomalies have been kind of most prevalent across the northern third of the country. But it has been a very mild month of November to recap the entire month. Would that be a good way to put it?
Yeah, that'd be a very good way to put it. It's pretty much been a blowtorch across most of the U.S. with still mild conditions in the east, but not as mild as further west. I actually can't find any cold anomalies for this month so far due to all the Pacific influence we've had. And I guess as far as you know, the way things have changed over the last 10 days or so, I wouldn't really call it necessarily a true pattern change yet, but I think certainly things have reshuffled in the high latitudes to where we've at least been able to get some cool air intrusions into the U.S., but still somewhat modified. Actually, not too long ago, I think it was from November 20th, we had our first snow of the season for interior locations, like the northern hills in New Jersey had about like 3 to 4 inches of snow with that really strong frontal system, and there are even some snow flurries all the way down to the coast. So that's certainly a welcome change for snow lovers. But of course, that was just really a temporary blip as warmth has returned ahead of another storm system that is currently cutting through the central U.S.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's been some snow in the Great Lakes. There's been some. We'll have to ask Mike about this, but I don't think there's been much snow in the Ohio Valley. It's been the month of November has been much above average. And you know, there's been plenty of discussion about a pattern change, but there hasn't really been much impetus for it yet. The pattern really from the the stratosphere down to the troposphere has been in flux, and now we're finally starting to see some of those changes. So let's bring in Mike and Ed. We have Michael Clark from BAM Weather, and we have Ed from AccuWeather. Both of them are good friends of ours, good colleagues. Doug, are you able to unmute them?
Yeah, they're actually unmuted. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Ed and Mike, can you guys hear us?
Yep, I'm here.
We're here. Fantastic. fantastic. So I'm really excited to have both of you guys on, obviously. This has been a long time coming. We've been chatting for a while. I'm really most excited to hear you guys' thoughts about the next couple of weeks. So I guess let's jump into that right away. We can talk a little bit about the pattern where we are now. But let's start there. And we could start with Mike. So how do you see the pattern as it stands right now? And obviously, you know, you guys are focused on the Ohio Valley, and you know, you do national forecasts as well. So how do you see the pattern right now? And, you know, we described it as being in a state of transition, but, how would you describe it now as we kind of close out November and look ahead to December?
Yeah, it's first of all, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, John. And, yeah, I like what you guys are doing here. It's good stuff. So, you know, for me and my company and the way that we do things is we kind of have always had a motto of doing things. We call it weather made simple. So we try to explain the weather and present the weather in a way that the average everyday person, the average everyday soccer mom or the farmer or whoever that may be, gets a very good understanding. So
right.
a big thing that's important with us is perception, you know, being reality. And it's very different. You know, Ed and I have discussed this 100 times, where you have the energy guy who is like very, very keen on a quarter or a half degree off, to whereas you have someone who is, you know, the normal everyday Joe here, who's just, you know, looking for weather and maybe has a small company, who perception is reality to them. So back to your question, you know, when we explain things as far as, you know, we started November here in the Ohio Valley in the 70s and 80s. Record heat, first 7 days of
yeah.
November's hottest it's ever been here. Over the last 7 days, we've been 2-3 degrees below normal. So in the real world, the flip has been real here, you know, in terms of what people feel. And you also have to think, I really think that it's just a different, you know, I don't want to call it a pattern change like you guys were discussing, but it's a different pattern. It really is. It's evolving. It's in that flux stage. And, you know, here we've got 7 days from now, we've got the potential for a snowstorm here in the Ohio Valley. And right now it's 55 and rain. We just had a 60 mile per hour wind gust down just south of Indianapolis from a line of showers and storms. So, you know, I think what's happening right now is an abrupt change that's going to usher in a drastically different feel for the opening up December here. You know, looking at the new European weeklies tonight, which I'm sure you guys have probably already looked at, but overall, it's a encouraging signal, kind of where we see things going. Just as far as it's a quote unquote colder pattern. It's not barbarically cold or insanely cold, but a lot of good potential for us here in the Ohio Valley to really, really be dealing with cash in on some snow and some wintry weather alongside with, you know, we get those storms, man, where they ride. We have the I-70 corridor through the Ohio Valley. And so, you know, the south side of Indianapolis can be rain in 33, and the north side of Indianapolis can be snow in 31 and have 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Right.
You know, so we're heading into that kind of pattern, I think. And but from the start of November to now, a huge difference. I mean, 30, 40 degree difference.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great way to put it, because I think, you know, the interesting thing is, like you said, the perception. If you're talking statistical meteorology or talking to like an energy forecaster, you know, the average over a period of time, you know, the whole United States still looks above normal for the month of November.
Right.
But when you look at the actual fundamentals of the weather pattern, you know, where we are right now, it's an entirely different ballgame than where we are on November 1st through November 7th.
Right. Definitely. And you know, we have a ton of agricultural clients. And one thing we stress to those guys, and one thing that we notice is they notice things like that. You know,
right.
They'll send an email or they'll call and say, hey, listen, man, I don't know what you're talking about, but we've had this, that, and the other occur, and it feels different to us. So and most of what we do, we try to relay it in a sense of how people are going to react to that change. And,
right.
You know, you may be able to, Ed or John or one of you guys may be able to touch on this, but one thing I was thinking, and if I'm off track here, you know, please speak up, but we have been, if we have this cold stretch here in December that's coming, we haven't been this cold in December in a long time. And even if we're not incredibly cold as far as heating degree days are concerned or whatever, I still think it could be a big energy demand increase just in the simple fact we haven't been this cold in so many years during this time of year.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Right. And I just want to step in here for 2 seconds. Again, thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it.
Of course.
Yeah, and what's interesting on my end is what I'm doing is definitely a combination of what Mike's doing and then what you guys do over at New York Metro Weather. I'm more of a, you know, short range guy on the operations floor, but I'm also an energy and ag guy in our long range department. And I've dealt with some of these traders in the energy realm where, you know, statistically, like you were saying, it really hasn't been, you know, a very cold, quote unquote, pattern change. But like Mike was saying, you know, for 90 to 95% of probably all of our clientele here, that colder regime is definitely noticed. And you know, especially going forward into December, I think here, compared to 2015 and looking at the last 10 Decembers, pretty much on average, you know, this is really going to be a definite change coming up here through the month of December.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think and Mike will have a great point too, because I think, I don't know, Doug, you might be able to help us out on this one, but how many Decembers has it been now that it's been, at the very least, at least slightly above average across a large majority of the eastern United States? I mean, I can't, it's been a couple of years at least, I would have to say, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of them off the top of my head. Yeah, I mean, 2013 had some decent cold air, but, I mean, there was a pretty strong southeast ridge, and I think New York City, I think for December 2013 was like plus one, but it was really right around average until the very last day where it was very warm. So, and there was some activity there with snow, but I mean, a lot of other Decembers in the recent decade plus have been not only warm, but blowtorches, like very significantly warm. I mean, I know December 2009 was pretty cold, December 2010 was cold, and December 2005 was cold. But
right.
Other than that, most Decembers have had not only warmth, but significant warmth across the country with records breaking at warmth at times. And then with this December, although, yeah, we might not get, you know, necessarily grid breaking cold because of the, you know, base state of the Pacific with the strong Pacific jet, there are certainly signs of coast to coast cold where maybe the entire northern tier of the country could be below average, especially if you get, you know, more, you know, ridging at the higher latitudes. So that, although it may not be record-breaking cold over any one particular area, you might get some, you know, cooling degree days over a relatively large area of the U.S.
Now, so that's a good point, too. I mean, where do you – I guess that kind of takes us into our next topic. So where do you guys see – and we could start with Mike and then go to Ed – but where do you guys see the major features setting up this December? You know, where do you see the major ridges and troughs? Obviously, we've kind of talked back and forth about how difficult it is to look at an analog year for this year. But without giving too much away, you know, about the forecast, you know, where do you guys see the major features setting up?
Yeah, I mean, from what I see right now, and like you said, it is difficult. We're in uncharted territory in the Pacific Ocean right now. It's a wacky pattern out there. I think that one of the most dominating features will be the Aleutian Ridge, the ridge over in the Gulf of Alaska. I think that there should be two factors with that is, you know, what's that Pacific jet stream going to do? How strong or how weak, or is it going to have any breaks in it? You know, to determine how far east or west that ridge ends up. You know, if that ridge is over towards the Bering Sea, you're going to have a trough in the Pacific Northwest. If that ridge is further east, you know, into the Gulf of Alaska, even into the Northeast Pacific, you know, you scoot your trough further east. It's I try to explain to my clients that the meteorology, synoptic meteorology 101, where there's a ridge, there's a trough. So a ridge trough, if we have a ridge set up, obviously the response downstream is a trough. So wherever that sets up, I think that ridge in the northern Pacific Ocean is key to the winter pattern. I think it's a winter where we can have a lot of cold without a lot of high latitude blocking. Not saying that there won't be, but 13-14, there was virtually no high latitude blocking for the span of the December, January, February months. So personally, I think the driver is the Pacific jet stream and the ridge in the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, we can touch more on tropical forcing if maybe Ed will touch on that or you, but that's in my opinion, in a nutshell, I think that's really where the answer to winter is. Obviously that southeast ridge is going to be a problem. How long or how strong does this thing become and how long does it hang out is a $1 million question, but in terms of the overall pattern driver, that's kind of my opinion on it.
Yeah.
Ed, what do you got?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I pretty much agree with everything Mike said there, especially about the Pacific. You know, bringing it a little bit closer to home for maybe some of the viewers in the New York City area. I'm an East Coast guy, currently located in Pennsylvania. And to the East Coast, like Mike was saying, we're really going to have to watch what's going on in Alaska here. But with respect to farther east, that's great for the Ohio Valley. You know, you can have that negative TMA pattern across the west, and you still get that active storm track coming up pretty much, you know, right through the Ohio Valley, especially, you know, I'm watching some of these NAO and AO cogs go positive for the second half, you know, of the forecast period into mid-December here. And, you know, for places farther east, you know, I think we really do need to watch that high latitude blocking, because if we really don't get any, my fear, if you do like cold and snow, is that pattern ends up back Mike's way in the Midwest. And obviously when that occurs, I'm sure most of you know that, you know, things like to cut up west, you know, through the Ohio Valley, and that pumps up the warmth across a lot of the East Coast. So, I mean, like Mike was saying, the Pacific is definitely the number one driver, but closer to home here on the East Coast, I do think high latitude blocking will also be a factor.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, it's the Ohio Valley and Northeast are relatively close in terms of, you know, I guess if you're talking in terms of mileage throughout the continental United States, but the weather patterns in both of those areas are affected by very different things. When you look at the Pacific Ocean, you know, I think it's really, I guess I'll put it this way. I think it's really difficult to look at this pattern and say that it's not suitable for snow and cold in the Ohio Valley as we get into December. I think the pattern is really ripe for those areas. The Ohio Valley, the Great Lakes, you might even argue the Mississippi Valley too, because there's a lot more room for error in those areas where even if the Southeast Ridge is able to build a little bit, you can still get that storm track, you know, as Mike was saying, the I-70, and then you even going up the Appalachians, you can still get a storm track there that
right.
still favors those areas for wintry weather. You know, if you're in the Northeast, there's a lot less room for error. In order to get a winter storm in those areas with this pattern, you're going to need that high latitude blocking to be there. And I think for those areas, that's the key. If you're in the Ohio Valley, I would say the pattern looks very favorable for at least opportunities for wintry weather.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I definitely agree with that.
It's interesting too, and we touched on this earlier this morning. It's interesting to see now and John, you seem to have quite a bit of knowledge in this area. It's interesting to see the stratospheric polar vortex start to reorganize and strengthen again. You know, I'd be curious to see what kind of implications that'll have on, you know, January.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is going to be to see how this behaves. For those listening that maybe, you know, the stratosphere, and this is not to sound condescending at all, you know, I mean this in the nicest way, it's very difficult to understand how the stratosphere can really impact the weather in the troposphere, which is the lower part of the atmosphere where, you know, we experience a lot of our weather. The stratosphere is way, way up there. but it, in a way, to think about it, it kind of, it's a trickle-down process a lot of times where it houses a lot of the processes that will eventually occur in the troposphere as it works down towards there. Seeing models show the stratospheric vortex reorganizing, that gives you the idea that possibly the high-latitude blocking won't be as keen to develop as we once thought. But, you know, there's another argument, too, because, I mean, the stratospheric temperatures are much warmer than they were last year, even though, you know, the vortex might reorganize. It's still very disturbed, and it's tending to move around a lot this year already, which is a lot different than what we've experienced. Ed, do you have any opinion on, you know, where you think the stratosphere is going? And I guess in some sense, you know, try to explain a little bit about how it works.
Well, yeah, you know, the vortex itself, okay, is obviously, you know, you have your easterly and westerly components. And what I'm looking at here is what's going to disturb this and what's going to make it actually, you know, have an event ongoing. And, you know, right now I'm not really seeing much in the way of you know, activity here through much of the next, say, 1 to 2 weeks. And you know, obviously I'm seeing on social media, you know, every single run of the GFS or the European, I'm seeing these 10 to 15 day, you know, projections. And honestly, I don't think they're very accurate. And going forward, and I'm the first to admit I'm not an expert in this sector. There are plenty of follows on Twitter who are fantastic. And, you know, Masiello, obviously, Sam Lilo as well. But looking over the next, say, 1 to 2 weeks, for, say, late December and into January forcing, I'm really just not seeing it. And going forward, like we were talking about, given the fact that this situation, you know, if it doesn't really have an implication, we're going to have to look towards the Pacific. So really going forward, in my opinion, I don't think, and again, I'm not an expert. You guys can comment as much as you want. But going forward over the next week or two, we're really not seeing too much in the way of activity. So again, I don't know if you guys have any opinions on that.
Doug, do you have any opinion on the stratosphere, or are you kind of status quo with what we're talking about?
I mean, I mostly agree with Ed on about what's going on in the stratosphere. You know, I don't really see any, you know, major poleward heat flux model that would really disrupt the stratosphere. Though you alluded to, you know, it is still, you know, it is still warmer and weaker than normal, so it's not necessarily hindering blocking, but I don't really see anything, you know, that's going to drive a sudden stratospheric warming event at all either. So,
right.
No.
Right.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Huh.
And that's
kind of,
you know, for the casual listener, just to break this down for like 15, 30 seconds. stratospheric polar vortex generally likes to hang out near the poles. So a lot of times, in a very basic sense, it keeps a lot of the Arctic air locked up there in the stratosphere. In order to get that air displaced to the south, whether that be over, you know, Europe or down here or wherever the case might be, you want to see the stratosphere disrupted, the stratospheric vortex moving around, splitting, whatever the case might be, some sort of warming in the stratosphere so that the process can begin to kind of dislodge that Arctic air and allow some ridging to build into the high latitudes, which if you were to imagine a ridge being up there near the pole, obviously the cold air that's there has to go somewhere. So it gets displaced. And that's what, as meteorologists, we look for to see, is that Arctic air going to be moving around? And that's the very basic sense of it. So when we talk about the stratospheric vortex reorganizing, what we mean is that the Arctic air in the stratosphere, in a sense, is going to have a tendency to kind of stay where it typically stays. And I agree overall with the sentiment that there's no real impetus right now that would lead me to believe that there's going to be a big stratospheric warming event. And that kind of turns us to the Pacific and circles back to Mike's point, which is that Aleutian Ridge, exactly where it is placed, how strong it is, that's going to have such a huge impact on the pattern, especially if you're looking at the western U.S., the central U.S., and the Ohio Valley, which, by the way, I kind of brings us to our next topic. Have you guys seen the forecast for some of the cold that is modeled to drop into the western U.S.? Because that's really starting to get impressive at this point.
Absolutely. incredible.
Yeah, they
what I think is really cool, sorry to interrupt, you know, and I'll keep this short and sweet, but looking at the atmospheric angular momentum, you know, right now it's essentially a measure of how the Earth is spinning. And the way it's been over the last, say, really for a very long time, but it's been in a positive El Nino-like state with, you know, an active southern branch of the jet stream, a lot of Pacific air coming into the country. And as we've been watching these projections of change towards a more La Nina-based state, watching the ocean and the atmosphere kind of couple with their processes, you know, a composite analog of all the, negative AAM states really does show that, you know, that strong deep trough coming into the northwestern Canada and into the Intermountain West and even into the High Plains. So from a research, you know, analog point of view, while it's very difficult to really pinpoint any analogs for the month of December due to the state of the Pacific, like Mike was saying, you know, it is good starting to at least get good to see that we're finally starting to see some semblance of sanity within the atmosphere. you know, and going forward, you know, I think, you know, as the atmosphere and the Pacific Ocean begin to couple a little bit more, you know, maybe once we get towards the second half of December, maybe into January, we'll be able to rely on analogs just a little bit more than we are right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, that's a very good point you brought about the negative AAM finally showing up, because that's an indication of actual La Nina conditions, which tend to favor Aleutian ridging rather than an Aleutian trough and really strong Pacific jet. And the models are finally showing some sort of poleward Aleutian ridging, as we've talked about before, you know, where exactly this ridging goes and how much it can actually bend towards, you know, the poles, or have a really strong implications as to how the downstream weather pattern happens. And if you look at the European ensembles today, they actually take the Aleutian ridge so far poleward that it goes into the Arctic oscillation regions too. It goes pretty far east and north towards the poles, which it kind of like disrupts the 500 millibar vortex a little bit, which helps to send some cold air southward. And then you get the pretty cold nationwide solution heading into the middle of December on the European ensemble.
Mike, I was going to ask you, Doug, that's a great point. I didn't mean to cut you off, but Mike, right. I know you have seen the weeklies. I haven't exactly seen them, but is that a similar idea to what Doug just described? Is that showing up on the weeklies as well?
In a sense. Now, here's the thing that I've noticed with the weeklies is they go through a little. There's still some adjustment in the pattern in the weeks 4 time frame, where it tries to weaken the Aleutian Ridge and suggest a little bit of troughiness there. It's almost like it's the last part of the flux of the atmosphere, like the new just after Christmas into the new year, because in the weeks 4 through 6 time frame, it brings that ridge right back and it's there for good. Really, overall, the weeks, the European weeklies overall, the next 46 days. In fact, I was just texting Ed this. The next 46 days, the weeklies are below normal for the entire United States.
Wow.
Overall, as a mean is concerned. So I think the weeklies, I think modeling in general, to be honest with you, is not handling it well. In my personal opinion, I really wouldn't be shocked if December just ends up, you know, wintry. I mean, in all stages of reality, I really wouldn't be shocked if modeling continues to pick up on the strength of this negative WPO developing and things and trends just start to change. Personally, that's an avenue I think is possible. Not saying that that's the overall outcome, but I really think that, you know, the modeling has hinted at this for a while. Could there be a brief 5 or 6 day rebound back to normal or slightly above? Absolutely. especially with the Southeast Ridge. But I think overall, man, I really think winter's is here to, and it's going to be here for a while. I mean, that's just kind of how I see it playing out personally.
Yeah.
Oops, sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Ed.
Okay. Well, you know, I really like the way Mike put that. You know, I really think, you know, going forward, I guess back to the original question, might have even been the question before, about just the European ensemble in general towards, you know, the 11 to 15 day. I do really do think that this cold shot coming, especially for the Intermountain West, the Plains, and the Midwest, is pretty high confidence for the lead time, in my opinion. But beyond that, I think, like Mike was discussing the pattern there, I do see, you know, given the kind of the variability of the Pacific and the fact that we're trying to trend towards a positive AO and NAO or, you know, lack of blocking at the high latitudes, at least on the Atlantic side, you know, I think that towards the middle of the month, maybe it's slightly later than that, but I just have a hint, you know, these types of patterns, especially when, you know, your upstream orientation in the Pacific here is still rather uncertain and it's a little bit variable. I think once we get past, you know, this fairly impressive cold shot, I would not shock me in the slightest if we, especially in the east, we bounce back well above normal for a couple days, you know, maybe ahead of another storm system prior to Christmas or something. Before another cool down towards the end of the month, like Mike was saying, is that, ridging in the Pacific kind of returns. And just a little point about the weeklies in general, and Mike kind of hit on this, you know, overall, I don't think these weeklies have been doing very well. And regardless of the outcome, I would, take it all with a grain of salt. Again, I think this cold coming up is relatively high confidence, but in my opinion, post, say, the middle of the month or so, my confidence drops off tremendously just because of that variability.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's the biggest question right now in the forecast for the entire winter is how does the second half of December play out? Because, I mean, by and large, I think we'll be able to look at the pattern, you know, middle to end of December as we head towards Christmas, you know, look at what's happened, what's forecast, and, you know, where we are at that point, and say with greater confidence, you know, how things are going to play out late December, moving into January, and moving forward. But right now, there's just so much uncertainty after that initial cold shot. And as Mike said, I think, you know, one avenue is definitely that this goes wall-to-wall wintry, and that's kind of just the way it goes. But then there's another avenue where we see a rebound in the Southeast Ridge kind of fluxes, and a lot of that depends on where the ridging is in the Aleutians, how it's placed, how strong it is, you know, how intense that is, how far north it goes, how far poleward it goes might be the better word. And then the high-latitude blocking as well, that's another question. But, you know, for me, Mike touched on this early on, and we keep coming back to it. I mean, the answer lies in the Pacific Ocean, whether it be the Pacific Jet or the ridging in the Aleutians, that's going to be where we find our answers in terms of exactly how the pattern is going to play out. And by the way, I agree strongly, the weeklies have been extremely inconsistent. And for anyone listening that, you know, maybe is kind of on the fence in terms of, you know, forecasting or, you know, what the benefit is, it's things like this because, you know, you can look at the weeklies and look at the maps and understand what they show and see blue and red, but you really have to know that they've been very inconsistent and there's a lot more going on here in terms of how the pattern is shaking down. You can't just look at it and take it kind of for face value. So that's where the benefit of, you know, working directly with someone kind of comes into play. So we have about 10 minutes left.
If I could touch on that, John.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to open the floor up to you guys, and I was going to start with Mike. So, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, and you said it so perfectly. And it's so important to know who you're, especially social media, know who you're following. You know, there are some really big vendors and some nets out there who work for some really big vendors who like to, they take this stuff and and they copy and paste it. You know, they rip it directly verbatim, and it gets so many people worked up because they're a big name, they're a big company, they got a lot of, you know, a lot of following and things like that, and I think it's important to know if someone is simply explaining a potential outcome, or if they're just posting it and saying, "Oh, here it comes." And I think it's important to see both sides of the spectrum with that, in respect to, you know, there are so many accounts out there, you just got to be careful with that, you know, that post things that, you know, hour 384 polar vortex splits and hour 384 total snow and, you know, crazy stuff. And so seeing those kinds of things, it's important, guys like you in the Northeast and me here in the Midwest, you know, it's key to have someone who can explain that for you in a responsible manner rather than call out madhouse on Twitter, you know.
So, I think, yeah, it's funny because I think that's the key too, because you know, there's always that debate, you know, everyone wants the answer right away. They want to know exactly what's going to happen, but I think there's an art to explaining the different options too, you know, because at the very least the end user understands, the client understands on a personal level, you know, here's where we are, here's what we're thinking, and these are the possibilities as to what may happen. So then when one of them happens, you know, you at least have given them a significant amount of lead time to understand the possibilities, why they are possibilities, and what the uncertainties are.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I think that you know, that's huge. It's key. And I always explain it like this, and for the average listener who's listening to this show, maybe this will help. But, you know, we have, just for example, like we have what's called the SREF, the model, the Short Range Ensemble Forecast Model, has 26 members. If we have a snow forecast for Indianapolis that's for 7 inches of snow, we may have one member that says 0 inches, and we may have another member that says 14 inches of snow. So, you know, it's the job of a meteorologist is to say, hey, what group, what cluster makes the most sense? What model core makes the most sense with this? And there's really that outcome. You could get no snow or you could get 2 feet. You know, it just depends on where this goes. And I think that the problem with, you know, you get these free apps, you get these apps that are supposed to predict it down to the city for you, down to the street. People think that that's actually possible, and really it's not, you know? So I think it's so important for guys like us to explain that to people, because in the end it helps with our reputation and what people believe to be true, you know?
I agree. Ed, did you want to touch on anything similar?
No, I 100% agree. You know, on a person-to-person level, especially with the client interaction, you know, and, you know, as technology advances, like Mike was saying, you know, more of these apps are going to come about, and it's just the way it is with the trend in automation with, you know, the field of meteorology. But in my opinion, you know, you can't beat the intuition of someone who's been doing it for, you know, a number of years. And as good as a computer can get, you know, it's just not going to beat it. And I think Mike hit on it really well. And going forward, you know, especially in, you know, the fields that we deal with, you know, agriculture, you know, you're dealing with a farmer who, if he, you know, he gets a frost in, you know, whatever month, May, you know, it could ruin his livelihood. And you know, that person-to-person contact can just be so invaluable, especially in the ag sector.
Yeah, I agree so strongly with that. And I think, you know, it's becoming more important, like both of you guys touched on. You know, we're getting these apps now where people, you know, the one thing I try to explain to a lot of whether it be clients or family members or, you know, just people in general, is that you got to understand that these apps, you know, 9 times out of 10, and by and large, are using algorithms to take computer model data and put them into their app. You know, you very rarely have a human being that has gone to school and devoted their life to meteorology that's trying to, you know, differentiate between what makes sense and what doesn't. And that's why, that's where the benefit is. If you're, you know, if you're looking at like a BAM weather, or you're going to Ed for your forecast, or you're coming to New York Metro Weather, because that's where you have people, you know, that are trying to differentiate between what's right, what's wrong, what makes sense and what doesn't. And you're not just looking at a spreadsheet or numbers or something like that.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
So I think we have laid out the sales pitch so far.
Yeah. That's right, buddy.
One of the jokes I had last year, I think Doug will remember this very well, but we had a big, you know, the big snowstorm in January in the Northeast. There was one point, and it was, I mean, we're talking like probably 36 hours out. So not a dramatic, you know, time lead time. But the SREF had a spread of about 30 inches at New York City. So that means one of the members was showing zero, and another one was showing about 30 inches of accumulation. And so that's what we were looking at as meteorologists.
Yeah,
that was fun. That whole week was so much fun.
Yeah, that summarizes it pretty well, I think.
So I just, touching on apps real quick, guys, I just got a really interesting piece of news, if you care to share. So we're a ThorGuard distributor here in the Ohio Valley. It's a lightning warning system.
Yep.
And one of our major competitors is WeatherBug. WeatherBug was, the app was just sold to a company, a New York-based company called Firm XAD Incorporated. The WeatherBug is no longer owned by Earth Networks. It was sold to a marketing company in New York. Apparently the app will still be, apparently this is a huge deal in the, you know, because WeatherBug app is a very popular app.
So
I thought that was pretty interesting. It makes you wonder in the day and age of these free weather apps, if a marketing company is buying it, should tell you something about these apps. You know what I mean?
I think we're going to see that more and more and more, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
But it was, that was pretty cool that you got to break the news live just now.
Yeah, for sure.
that's one thing too, you know, before we wrap this up, just to continue the discussion a little bit, I think we're going to see more and more of that because, you know, whether we like it or not, these weather apps are really popular among the general public. And I think what's going to eventually happen, and this might be good, this might be bad, because I think the reputation of meteorologists might go down before it goes back up. But I think more and more these larger companies that might be more marketing directed and not weather directed are going to start buying these apps. And you're going to see inevitably the forecast quality go down of these apps if they're not owned by a company that's focused on meteorology.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
It's an interesting, you know, that's an interesting, you know, tidbit of information there, Mike, because if you look at WeatherBug, excuse me, and again, I don't know much about them, but I think it's interesting because they've never really been focused on the forecast side. They've been more on the, you know, the weather station side and the lightning side, like Mike was saying. So I think the future is really interesting with respect to all apps because, you know, I think they're going to find their niche and then kind of run with it. So it'll be interesting for sure going forward.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I think that's a really interesting piece of news too. So So we're running up against the clock here, but I wanted to take a minute or so to just thank you guys for coming on. Again, if anyone's just joining us, first of all, I apologize because the show's about to end. So I hope you go back and listen to it. We do have an archive, so you can go back and check it out. But we have Ed with us, and we have Michael Clark from BAM Weather as well. Ed Valley is a great friend, great meteorologist, and we have Michael Clark from BAM Weather who is also a great meteorologist, great friend, and both of them are really successful and really just great people to talk weather with. And, you know, I wanted to take a second to thank both of you guys for coming on here. You know, we started this podcast a couple months ago. It's been successful for us. It's been something that it kind of gives us a public forum to talk, you know, and kind of discuss the weather, talk about how we're feeling, you know, obviously we want to talk a little bit about the product that we have too, talk about our respective regions and discuss, you know, what the benefits are of working with us. But, you know, it's less of a sales floor and more of a place for us really to talk about the weather. And I'm really proud and happy that we were able to have you guys on, and we will, I hope personally that we, and I'm sure Doug does too, but I hope that we're able to have you guys back on throughout the winter. You know, as storms pop up, whether it be in the Ohio Valley or Pennsylvania, Northeast, whatever the case might be, we hope to have you guys back on.
Absolutely, yeah. Man. I appreciate you having me, and we got an interesting scenario late next weekend. We may cash in on the first big snow event of the year here in the Ohio Valley, so we'll see how it pans out. It'll be fun.
Absolutely. It looks very active over the next couple of weeks. So my recommendation would be, if you live in the Ohio Valley and you are looking for an accurate weather forecast, to go check out BAM Weather. That's BAMWX. Check out their forecast and get yourself subscribed to them for a forecast that really makes the most sense and is able to save you yourself and or your company or your farm, whatever the case might be, a lot of money and time and effort. Let Mike and his team there and Kirk deal with it. And in Pennsylvania, contact Ed Valley, because he is someone that really deals with that whole region and has worked really hard to kind of become an expert in that area as well. He forecasts nationally too, but both of their Twitter links are on our page, and we hope you guys are just as willing to work with them as you are to listen to our podcast. So, guys, it's been a pleasure to have you on. We hope to have you back. Doug, thank you for leading us in. I apologize for having to be on the phone for this, it's been a pleasure, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Of course, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it, man.
Of course. Thanks again, Ed and Mike. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Yep, no problem, Doug. You guys have a great night. Seriously.
Yeah, you too. You too. Take care.
Yep.
All right. Take care, John. See you guys.
Take care, guys. Take care.
All right. Bye.
So that wraps up the final minutes here of WeatherEyes. We're very thankful to have all of you guys on. It's been a pleasure. I'm sure that you guys will have questions. If you do, make sure to get on a Twitter account or use the contact form and send those questions over to us. We'll be more than happy to answer them. And we're very excited to talk to you guys again next week. If you are interested and you want to talk to us further, again, the contact form or Twitter, you can also send us an email. Our link is right up there on the website. We're more than welcome to talk to all of you guys. And it's been a pleasure once again. So for Doug Simonian, I am John Hominuk for New York Metro Weather. This is WeatherEyes. Have a great Monday evening, everyone. Take care.